What's up, TRP Nation? Today, we're in the field for a very special episode. We're reporting live from the Suzanne Roberts Theater in the heart of Center City, Philadelphia on the Avenue of the Arts. We are joined by none other than author, actor, playwright, and producer Brad Baker to discuss his upcoming stage play, Till Death Do Us Part, that will be taking over this building from September 14th to September 17th. He's got an all-star cast. We're going to cover everything leading up to this huge production, his history, what it got him interested in, you know, the arts and everything like that. And I just want to start by saying welcome to the show, Brad. Thank you for coming today.
Hey, man. Thank you for having me. I got to get you to introduce me more often.
I think I'll blow everybody away, with the intros, man. We had a crazy one yesterday with Tone Trump. And he was just like, you just made the album.
Dog, I'm about to put this on the front of the dock when we put this one together.
I got to make sure that, you know, whenever I'm bringing somebody on the platform that, you know, we setting them up properly and introducing them and letting people know the full credentials and exactly why they here. You know, we don't just allow any and everybody, you know, on the platform because, you know, we have a very specific, diverse audience that's looking for knowledge. They're looking to be entertained. They're looking for, you know, dynamic human stories, and you absolutely fit the bill. So, you know, what better way than to introduce you to our audience again, because you did, you know, sponsor the live show. Thank you for that.
Uh-huh, no problem.
Gave away 4 sets of VIP tickets. Everybody's been made whole with that. You know what I'm saying? So the TRP Nation thanks you for that, man. But, you know, now it's time for us to tell your story today. And like I alluded to, we have a pretty big, diverse audience. Tell all the people out there about yourself, your upbringing, and you know, what it's like being from the Philly area.
Just growing up, man, I really didn't know what I really wanted to do. Like, went to college, went to Westchester. That's where I met you, and we kind of like started to build our friendship. I was up there playing football and trying to figure out life. And then one day I got out of, once I got out of college, I was taking all odd end jobs, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do. So I end up meeting this girl. So we was in the club, and the guys, my friends was with me. I don't even think he was with me that night, but somebody was with me, and this girl walked up to me and was like, yo, I think you should be in a movie. And they're like, oh, she trying to bag you. Like, she trying to bag. I was like, I don't know. So she ended up getting me in it, and I ended up being like in a short film, and I got the acting bug, and I was like, dang, I like this a little bit. So then I start acting a little bit more, and then one of my homies came up to me and was like, yo, why don't you try to write? And I was like, I ain't no writer. Like, I'm good with numbers. Like, I really don't know what to talk about.
Right.
He's like, yo, if you can't act, nobody cast you or nothing, you might as well, you know, write your own stuff and put yourself in your own stuff.
So punch your own ticket.
So I'm like, I tried. So I wrote my first official play. I wrote Twisted, Her Life is Secret. And then once I wrote that, I was like, all right, I like it. But my director was like, came up to me, Walter DeShield, shout out to Walt. He was like, you ever think about going to script writing class? AKA telling me like, yeah, this need to like,
tighten this up.
So I was like, no, but I'm gonna try. So I ended up going to Temple, took 4 classes, and then I found out how to actually do it. And it made the process so much easier to do this. Like, I could do this stage play stuff and script writing in my sleep. But that's pretty much how I kind of got on with it. I was like, and then after that, I went on to fast rewind back. What got me into theater was after I got my first role acting, I end up going out for a role in the theater. Shout out to Brittany Williams. She gave me a role in one of her shows. I think it's called Black Diamond. I got paid $1,500 for it. But I went out there initially, when I went out there to do the role, I was just trying to go there and make my mom happy. I was just trying to get a role, like, what's up? How you doing? Cool. I'm off stage, whatever. I ended up getting the lead role. And I was like, damn, I love this energy of our crowd, that specific. So I was like, damn, what can I do? And I was just trying to figure out the process of, like, you know, how I wanted to go about it. But once I went back to school and learned how to script write, I was like, oh, I got it. I started doing my research about the theater, seeing what the money looked like, what the ins and outs looked like. And once I started researching, I was like, oh yeah, Tyler is retiring, Madea, oh yeah, I'm coming right in, and perfect way to fill that void, you know what I mean?
In an era right now, you know, where like Tubi movies are dominating and going viral, and a lot of different, you know, forms of content, podcasts, shorts, skits, and things like that. How important was it for you to educate yourself and go back and get a real foundation of script writing so that your narratives could stand out from all this other stuff that's out there?
It was so important because, like, knowing what I know as far as like the structure of writing and getting everything done, I can look at someone's script or I can watch something and see all the technicalities that could make this possibly better.
Exactly.
So that gives me an edge on it because I actually have the man hours and of actually doing it, where I kind of know the ins and outs of it. So when you see a Tubi movie, I cringe sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I seen a post the other day, like there's Tubi movies and there's movies on Tubi, which is like, yeah, no, you know what I'm saying? Majority of it is Tubi movies.
Yeah, yeah, about 80-20.
And no disrespect to that, because there's a niche for that, you know what I mean? And I know how hard that process is to even shoot a movie. So shout out to them, because I know how complicated it is. But for me, I kind of want like, I got a different angle and view on how I want things to go, because I really am really good at the playwright and I understand our people and things like that.
Yeah.
I've been afforded opportunities to be in writing rooms with in FX and soon to come with HBO. So I got a lot of stuff that I've been around with people that actually know the ins and outs. So, but knowing that gives me a really good edge, especially with my audience anyway.
Yeah. For people that don't know, how different is the discipline of being a playwright and a play producer versus being in a writing room for like a movie or a TV show, whatever? Like, how different is it in terms of the prep that goes into it, and then also the difference of the final product of how it's displayed to people?
So writing rooms is way better when you got creatives in there that know what they're doing, and Hollywood been doing it for a while, so it's easier to collectively bounce an idea amongst each other to figure it out, right? Because really, writing is, we're telling a story, but there's a problem solving, right? We have a conflict, right? The adage of it is introduce, like, to script writing 101 is introduce some people, is act one is introduce you into it, introduce your cast, get them in some shit is act two, and get them out of some shit is act three. And knowing that, when you got people that's, when you have specific people in the room that know that, you can pretty much, if we in here trying to figure something out, it's easier. But as far as me as playwright, I gotta figure that all out. Yeah. I had a co-writer this time, Sheena Gates. We originally wrote this piece together, and when we were writing it, when we finished it, it felt like, why did I get married too? And it didn't really like feel like this. So we ended up scrapping this, and then she moved to Atlanta and ended up coming back here and kind of like trying to figure it out. She's kind of like helped me afar. I really got into this script and kind of like rewrote everything and kind of like get us to Till Death Do Us Part, the actual story, which is the sequel to my last show.
Gotcha. What lessons? What lessons have you learned on this journey from your first play to now?
The journey is tough because you're in an industry where I never got a lot of help. So I lost a lot of money. Like I can tell you how much I lost. I lost $116,000, $116,379.37 of trying to build this to right now.
Down to the penny.
Down to the penny, just figuring it out. Cause I would ask people for information on how to actually do it, and I didn't know how to do it. Like, as far as like, I knew how to produce a show, but like, how do I get people in the building? Am I overpaying for this and overpaying that? So the difference between now and then is I know the knowledge now. So now I have the equip where everything is like real strict. It look easy how I make it look easy, but now it's a real tight ship on how I run this, as far as like being organized, having a team in place, knowing that I can't do it all. I wish I could, but in a realm of something like trying to do something impossible, you got to have people around you that are capable or believe you and want to do the impossible things with you. And that's how I start bringing my team on. And you know how it is. Once you sow an idea, you know, and you really put it out in the atmosphere and you manifest it, people start latching on to it. And it's like, hey, I can help you with this. And it might be little. Hey, I can make the flyers. Hey, I can do this. Hey, I can do that. Hey, I know how to build the set. And it start rolling like that from there.
How important is delegation to being the best leader that you can be?
It's super important. Like any business owner, and I'm really business first, you have to be able to delegate, because you can't do it all by yourself, right? And part of being a good leader is being able to say, hey, I'm not going to do it all, because you want to be accurate and you feel like you can do everything because you know that you're going to do it right. But the trust is in your team. Like, one of my things is, people don't really know, is I write the script, I sit down with my team, and we discuss. I'll say, hey, in scene one, I wanted this. Scene two, I go through it. And I don't know what the show looked like until y'all see the show.
Gotcha.
And that's how much trust and delegation that I have and my team to kind of know where I can take that stress of me not knowing of how the show is going to turn out, where I know I have a set professional hands of people that are going to take care of as if it was theirs.
Yeah. So. We have an audience that's really knowledge seeking. So with that in mind, Talk to us about your role as the playwright, the producer, the leader, but then also all of those subsequent roles that bring this together that's going to give us the stage play September 14th to the 17th.
So my role initially, right, I'm the creator of this, right? So I come through and I have the big idea of like this grand old idea saying, hey, I want to do a show. And then once I go through the process of writing the script and breaking down, it's at a point of where I like it from the setting to the characters and stuff, because these things change all the time as I'm writing. Every time a script is never done. Like if I go in that script right now, I probably would edit it right now. That's coming up next week.
Yeah.
But it takes a while. So it's a process to it. So I build it out from say no. So it's like a writing process, the creative process, right? What do I do to get inspired to write this, right? Who am I going to write this about? What story do I want to tell to the audience that's going to like resonate with them in some type of way where we not just shucking and jiving, kind of like bad mouthing black men, black women. I don't think that's conducive to the growth of black people or in general. So I kind of make sense of that. But as far as that's concerned, once I get it rolling as that, I start to get people in position. Okay, who could build this kind of set for me, right? Who can I get to direct this that can bring my vision to light? And then I start vetting people and start interviewing people. And then once I get those aligned, then we all get together and then we start doing audition processes. Yeah. And then we got to do a marketing plan. All right, how are we going to get these people? We got this great show, right? So how do I get people get in the building? Because I know once I get you in here, right, it's like a sale. I know once I get you in the building, that's a retention sale. My sale from the retention is basically saying, hey, I seen an amazing show. Whatever they do, I'm coming back. But exactly. I have to get you here first. And that's the key to all of this. No matter what, this script could be terrible. This show could be terrible. But if I can sell this to the audience that this is what this is, you know, I show it is. But this show is well hyped.
Yeah.
Well deserved.
You touched on something that's real important, but you kind of like glossed over it and saying what you said. How cognizant are you of imaging, programming, stereotypes and all of that? Being, you know, a black man, being a minority. When you're creating your art, how cognizant and mind present is that for you to not fall into certain pitfalls and like traps when you're putting your product together?
I mean, I consume a lot of stuff, so, and I understand a lot of things that go on in the music business on how they position us and try to, sometimes in the industry, try to position us to make us look lower classer than what we are. You know what I mean? And like for me, my circle of friends that I have, they all go-getters and doers. Like,
absolutely.
We actually come from those environments, but we are not those environments. So that's the difference between it. So it's my responsibility for the next generation or people that's involved with me to kind of like bring them abroad to kind of like show them that. So I'm really cognizant of like how I want to display it. You know what I mean? It's several ways how you can skin a cat. And that's how I approach it. Like I can write a bunch of profanity in it and curse and do a bunch of like ratchet stuff. But like, what is this going to do? Like, you know what I mean? And I also don't want to be flat and boring either. Like, ain't nobody trying to see that. So it's like it's a thin line and it's a balance between it. But I consume a lot of stuff and like information that I need people to know. Like, that's why I always like these type of shows. Like when it comes to stage plays, that's why I try to keep it. I try to meet people where they're at. Right.
Right.
So I'll write like Till Death Do Us Part. When I say meet people where they're at, they like comedy, they like drama. So where can I do to make a blend between it? So one of the black shows that I always love is A Different World. Kind of like gave us some structure of black people seeing people positively going to like going to college and dealing with conflict. And then the other aspect of it is like Martin, right? So Martin is a hilarious staple. It's one of the most iconic shows ever created, but it's something that we resonate from 30 years from now, 20 years
from now. Watched it last night.
You could be in
Martin
forever.
Watched the DMV episode last night.
and the fact that it's crazy how you say that, because this show is pretty much similar to like who stole the DVD player in the midst of that. But
yeah.
that's how I try to write with the stage plays of that, right? Because there's a certain niche, right? And I kind of like did that. Like kind of like using the Tyler Perry like format, not so much of the church avenue of going that route, but finding that niche of people that kind of like will resonate with that. And that's pretty much it on how I got that.
Yeah. Let's talk about social media, because the social media landscape is different now than when you did your first play.
Yeah.
So how vital was social media this time in helping you cast a wider net to be able to find more qualified people and better actors and better stagehands and better whatever to make the production more robust?
So social media is like, we're not going nowhere with social media, right? Everything is evolving. And that was the difference with between getting me where I'm at today to where I was, because I really didn't understand the conglomerate of the juggernaut of what social media really has in its power to influence people no matter what. Like for me, you can't trick me on some of the stuff, because I kind of like see some of the ploys and some of the things and tactics that people use when it comes to the marketing stuff. But like watching social media is so important because you can touch a wide variety of audience, right? Before I used to piss money in the wind, right? Before I used to have, my outcomes used to be that. I used to print 10,000 flyers and be everywhere posting and delivering to people, where people would get a flyer and be like, yeah. Or pick your teeth with it, put it in your car, throw it on the ground. And it's like, I'm not really getting the results that I can get, you know what I mean? As far as it, like guerrilla marketing of that sort, some of it works, some of it don't work, but it wasn't hitting. But now when you got social media, I can at a tap of a button, I can get all the demographic of people who I like.
Exactly.
Who I think would enjoy my show. So I'm able to, you know, sift through and do it that way. And as far as that, people are able to see my work. And then word of mouth, you know, people want to see it like, oh, I like stage. Hey, can I be a part of this? And then I'll vet them, and I have certain people to bring them in. But you can cast a bigger net to get bigger things. Like even with my casting, like there's, even with Chasing Cash last year, I had an actor from Atlanta that was going to come up and do this. And I promise you, we're in a safe place.
It felt like the same. It looked like the same one.
Yeah, like, I promise you, this theater is super safe. Like this ain't,
we're going to cut around all of that.
Yeah, it's super safe. Like, we got all that. But yeah, so I
had an actor from Atlanta.
And out of nowhere, he couldn't do it. So these things, it's about problem solving and really thinking on your feet and really be able to pivot, right? When something happens, not dwell in the moment. All right, what can we do to fix this and make this right?
Yeah.
So social media allowed me to find Pierce Williams, who I just put in the hashtag, Jersey actor, Philly actor, whatever. And I'm sifting through like 5,000 actors. I'm scrolling through because I'm like, I'm a week away from shooting my trailer. I got to get somebody in there. Nobody else know that I'm scrambling like that. They think it's kind of cool. I'm like, we going to find it. I'm low-key panicking, but part of a leader is you got to keep calm and cool no matter what that looks like. I got to be stoic in the room. If there's something going on, I'm in control of this. I went through 5,000 people and actually found my star on my show because of social media. I probably would never have been able to find them if that the case. I probably would have messed around and I would have had that come out of retirement and act again, and I'm done that, like, for the most part. If I get into acting, I'll be like the guy from Marvel where it's like, hey, you know what I mean?
Bit parts.
Yeah, that's it.
Talk to us about Till Death Do Us Part. Let's talk about who's in the cast, the runtime. What are you excited about, you know, as the producer of it and the brainchild?
Yeah, so Till Death Do Us Part, man, this is a phenomenal murder mystery, and y'all are in for some treats. Even from it, like, I even like to write certain things. Everything marketing for me is like important. Everything is branding. Like, if you follow me, all my logos are in certain font. So even with Chasing Cash, it's in Thriller font in red. With Cash, it's in red. And this one is Till Death Do Us Part in red. So it's popping. And I'm gonna write another play that has something in it that kind of like the mantra of what our Black community is always subconsciously chasing around. It's cash. Then we placely putting death in our face. For whatever case may be reason. But for To Death Do Us Part, it's a really, really good piece. Coming up with it, I really felt a lot of pressure because I had a really good show previously. And it's almost like I was like a rapper that had a hot single but didn't have an album or another single to follow up with.
Right.
So it's like, where do you go next? So the pressure of that came. And then as I start to trust the process of myself, we end up coming here. And then as it started rolling, I got Talib that was involved, which is one of my good friends, PNB Rock manager, RIP PNB Rock. And Talib he's one of the gatekeepers in Philly. He don't like when I say that, but he's one of the gatekeepers. And you know what I mean? He seen me and was like, y'all want to be a part of this? I want to take this to the next level. And he was like, how can I help you get here?
Yeah.
And I have so many relationships with Milan from Milano de Rouge. Where basically my first show, she sponsored the whole entire thing. So we started our journey at the same exact point.
Oh, wow.
And she was like, here, Brad, whatever you need, same thing, vice versa. So this time I'm like, I need a favor. I said, hey, Milan, I need you in the show. Like, she was like, what you need, Brad? So, all right, I gave it to her. And then right after that, she's like, what else you need from me? No. She ended up giving me a marketing plan and everything. And then I was like, yo, I want Saud in this play. whatever y'all do to get Saul in this play, I want it. She's a phenomenal person, like philanthropist for the city of Philadelphia and our community. She does a lot. And I was like, yo, her personality is perfect for this. You know what I mean? Perfect blend to, you know, where it won't infectiously mess up her brand, but also kind of like pill for it. Because it's like the psychology of this whole theater stuff is basically, you know, I got to have a celebrity in it, right? Vivica Fox, Genuine or somebody in it to kind of like pill this. And I kind of wanted to take the Tyler Perry route where he kind of like grassrooted and pretty much had like a specific cast. We're going to do different shows.
Yeah.
And we just going to grow it that way. And if you see it, I do have similar cast people in it, like Skeet and Jermaine are back in this stuff. But even so, casting it.
But they're back in a different, in completely different roles than what they did for you before.
Yeah. Yep. They're completely different roles for this time around. So it was like, I was trying to find a celebrity in this, and I had a couple celebrities. I'm not going to speak on it, but I had a couple celebrities that were supposed to be in it, and it was some unfortunate things that happened where they kept dropping off. But like I said, you always have to pivot, and what's the next best move? And I was like, what better serve than have a community where I can have an all-star cast of Philadelphia people, all Philadelphia cast with all the talent to display that, yo, we more than just the gun violence that is showing on TV and the actors and the rappers and things like that. Because we have a lot of good people and major actors coming from this. You know what I mean? Like Nafisa Williams, it's so many different. Will Smith, Kevin Hart. What's the young lady that's on Abbott Elementary School?
Kendra Brunson.
Yep. So we got her, like, it's just amazing people. And we had a run. She was supposed to actually be in one of my shows previously before this and chasing cast before she took off.
Yeah.
Shout out to her.
Too late now.
Too late now. That bag went up. I need a whole nother budget for that.
That's a different bag.
It costs from that. But yeah, putting the cast together and just methodically knowing where I'm going with the marketing plan, how I'm going to get these people out to come see it. Because it's not, they're here to help me be a vessel to help get the word out. Like, they all want to see it, whether they experience the show or not, you know, they're in there for that specific reason to kind of like push this to a whole nother level where it's going to go.
What made you identify these, you know, dynamic people like Milan, like Saul, that are dynamic just in life period and in other ways, entrepreneurship, selling clothes, philanthropy, whatever, and say, I think they have the right temperament to do a stage play?
I'm all for people that can execute an idea from a small idea of something. Like, yo, I want to be the best cook in the city, or I want to be the biggest clothing brand that has ever done it. You know what I mean? Compared to everything. And those things where people that have those worth ethics are the people that I kind of want to latch to, right? Because you are your network. You are your network is your net worth. And if I don't have people around me that are cognizant of like their business and what they do and how they execute certain things, like I'm not going to be able to grow as far as like being in a space where I want to go to. So they have a lot of information to me that can help me where I don't have to add to that total of money that I've lost previously, where I can say, hey, I took that test. This is what you should do to do it. This is my suggestion. You start bringing around people like that, then it starts to elevate it. Then my production value goes from initially starting my first play $16,000 budget to a $40,000 to a $50,000, and then now this one to like a, this one's like close to like $75,000 for this. So it's a lot. It's a lot involved when it comes to that, you know.
What gives you the confidence to be able to compound these show budgets like that and put that type of financial pressure on yourself?
I've got this. This is one of the things I don't like. I don't lack confidence. Like, I don't let my confidence around people's room like affect people's insecurities, because that usually lack it. But it comes back down to, you ever know something, like when you know your heart of heart, like this is going to work.
Talked about it at the live show.
You said at the live show, like, and you can contest to this as being with TRP, and I've been with you since the incubation of when you start thinking about it.
Before that.
And when you was like, I remember, I'll never forget the conversation. You was like, people call me Cook. Yo, Brad, I know this is gonna work. If I do this and I do this, and you just so wholeheartedly believe, it's just the power of manifestation and knowing in your heart of hearts, no matter how this go, this is gonna take off. And that's, I always live with it that way. Like, no matter what goes right, and everything doesn't go right for me, right? I've been in a stage where somebody go off script and drop the thing, but I still end up going through. But I just know, like, I just know it. Like, something just resonate with me, and I just know it. And I just knew, like, something came to me in my spirit was like, yo, you gotta get ready. Like, this, you playing around with it, you have to get ready. And I just know. And I'm so confident that in my process and what I do, I know where I'm going and I know where I'm heading, regardless if nobody else in the room believes, I believe it wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing gonna do it. Like, even before I sell a show out or anything, I know before I write it, like, I see it through the end. It's like the 48 laws of power. Like, I plan to the end. And I really know what the ending of this is. This is the beginning of this.
Right.
So I really, like, my confidence in that, I know this is going to go. This show might not be for everybody. Somebody might see the show and is like, oh, he hyped this, and it might not. And others might be like, man, this is Tyler Perry right here. But
yeah,
my confidence either way is not going to waver, because I'm going to continue to just keep climbing, because I know in my heart of heart, like, this has to work. Like, there's no other plan B to this. Like,
right.
I know this is going to work. Now I got to get the people around me that believe me, and now I got to find the audience that are actually going to believe me and take that ride, similar to how you build your audience with your stuff that you got on with TRPE. Now you have a cult following it, enjoys your content.
Right.
They'll follow you to the end of the earth, you know what I mean? And that's the type of people that, like, I be around. Like, I surround myself with you because I know how this works. We have conversations.
We
all
brainstorm
the
all the time.
All day. We do this all day.
Yeah, we talk. We end up on the phone 3, 4, 5 hours, stuff like that. I'm cooking or doing whatever, and it's like we still,
like, oh,
you know,
shit.
just you know, because iron sharpens iron, man. And I just have a tremendous amount of respect for you, and you know, blind loyalty and blind faith in your talent and you know, in what you're doing, and. You know, it's just one of them things where it's like you said, man, but belief, it starts with belief in yourself.
Yeah.
And once you believe in yourself, it makes it that much easier for people to follow you.
Yeah, man. They'll tell you, like, I got a lot of stuff I work in. There's a, they'll, like, some of my staff, I had you talk, they'll tell you the legend of Brad. I had one particular show I had, and we were taping the show. And for some reason, the show before, they were smoking. I'm like, oh, this live taping is going to be all that. But those things happen in stage. You have to remember, which is harder than film, because film, I can say, cut, you'll do that again.
Ain't no cut.
I need to raise the stakes on this. Why are you like this? I need this. Where do you think your character's at? Like, where do you think you're in this space? All right, get to it. Action. This is live. You got to remember, this script itself is 114 pages. So in script language, every page in script writing is 1 minute long.
Gotcha.
So they have to remember 114 pages front to back, because they have to know everybody's line, because everybody's line driving it. So to go back to it, I'm watching the show and we taping it, everything goes smooth. One of my actors gets confused and drops the twist right in the middle of the show.
Mm.
Pretty much anything going after that is pretty much like, well, what's going on to ruin it?
Yeah.
So he's able to get through it. At intermission, everybody panicking, what the fuck, what the fuck? I literally went back there and rewrote the entire play to make it all make sense for that.
During intermission, you went back and rewrote the play.
In 15 minutes, I rewrote the entire play to make it all make sense for everybody. Boom, I said, all right, I went back there writing. They looking at me like I'm crazy. I'm back there writing. All right, boom. Hey, when he goes on this particular scene, you're going to say this right here to drive that right here. And after he says that, you're going to say that. What are you going to say when he says that? Cool. What are you going to say? Cool. Now, when he says that, you're going to do that. And I just rolled it, and I made it all, tied it all to make it make sense at the end, and made it like that. And he was like, what the fuck? But that's the thing. I put so many hours in this. Like, I don't panic. Like, cause I'm always prepared. I'm always prepared to do, like, problem solving as a leader of people in general. You have to be able to problem solve real time. If not, the ship is gonna go down, and you ain't gonna be able to do nothing. You know what I mean? You gonna lose what you built because people gonna see you're erratic during certain things.
Yeah.
But yeah, man. I got a lot of stuff like that when it comes to it. But I'm really good at it. Like, probably after this, I'll go to film. After this, for sure. Hey, there's people scratching at me going to film, so I got so much.
I mean, you've had, you know, not to say who, what, when, where, or how, but you've had, you know, development offers for TV shows and stuff like that with big networks that you've turned down because, as a businessman, you know, putting your business hat on, you inherently understand your worth. You know industry standard. You know your personal calculation of what you bring to a project and all of that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, like you said, you've been in those writer's rooms and everything like that. So it's like, I think it's a natural transition for you, but on your terms.
Yeah, on my terms. And that's how it was. Like, my first time I got flown out, I sound like a chick. First time I got flewed out, I was like, they had me a ticket. They bought me first class.
They had your name at the
My name at the jump, first class, pulled me up, had me in, dropped me to an Airbnb, not a hotel, decked out, came in, and they was like the utmost respect. I was like, dang, it's like almost like, I'm like, how do they know me? But I went in there, and literally, they was like, show me what you got. And I went over there, just scene structure, just going in and showing what I know about scene structure and character development and stuff like that, like things that I do to pull out things. They was like, they like almost like, oh, we gotta lock him up. and I had networks offer me big offers. But when you know that your value, once that offer comes to you, like, okay, this is a low ball right here. I'm in sales.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're going to offer me the lowest point of this. You know what I mean? So I said, I'd rather ride this out and do it on my terms to be able to dictate later on, so I can dictate the terms of what Brad Baker Productions really is and what does it look like. You know what I mean? When it comes to that. But yeah, I turned down a lot of that stuff, man. And we have conversations like that all the time. So I was like, yo, such and such came and offered me, like, you better take that. I got offered $250,000 for an idea that I just completely turned down because I was like, oh no.
And that was just like a 250 and like walk away from it.
Yeah,
like,
walk away from it.
Like not even having no episodes, none of that. Just like the premise.
Listen, I ain't got 250 to walk away from, but like, yeah, just the premise of everything and just going in the room, like, and that's friends that believe in me, like, just gave me a whim. I'm like, yo, just get me in the room. I'll do it. And I got in the room with one of my good friends and I was able to pitch. And it was like, I had everybody mind, there's 12 people around. It's already pressure, people staring at you. And they just looking at you, okay, and go. Like, you know what I mean? Tell me a joke or something. And I go in there and I tell them my plan or whatever. They like, mind blown. Like, we're going to talk to you at this. And then afterwards, offered me that $250,000. I went home. I told my mom. She's like, you better take that. I was like, nah. They want $250. This worth 10 times more than $250.
Yeah.
So we just going to sit this out until I figured
out. Yeah, it's like the, I use two examples to kind of crystallize it. It's like the Master P example, which is I walked into Interscope Records, Jimmy Iovine offered me $1 million off the street, never knew me. I just played my music for him for the first time. He offered me $1 million. Me and C get on the plane, fly back to Baton Rouge. I say, yo, I'm turning this down because if they offer me one, I'm worth 10.
Mm-hmm. That was it. And that's the research that we do. And people don't see it because I watch people like that, Master P, P Diddy, like when it comes to contracts and industry stuff, how to grow it. Dame Dash is probably one of my biggest influences of
same
all
here.
That. Like, because I what he says is actual, 100% factual. Like, I can't resonate with that because I'm like, no shade to nobody, but I'm not really a worker bee. Like, I gotta kind of like do my own thing and call my own shots.
Yeah.
And I kind of like trust myself in those processes because I know I'm gonna make the right decisions when they need to be made. You know what I mean?
So, yeah. And then the other example is that we all saw unfold in the public is the Dave Chappelle example, where you make a deal based on certain terms, you outperform the deal, they offer you this, which is a fraction of what you actually generated. And then when you don't take that, they try to ruin you.
But you gotta be cautious of that. But as long as I know my purpose and where I'm going as far as like where my brand is going and where I want to represent it, cause I always wanna grow. Like, I'm not ever gonna stay stagnant. Like, these stories right here are easy to tell, right? Cause I can tell black love and stuff like that. But where do I get in the nuances of making this complex? I'll make it sci-fi and make these same stories on another planet.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? That's all they are, a bank heist and we on another planet and we driving away. That's where the money comes in. Like, right now, you'll probably never see another Ben Stiller movie or somebody like that or Adam Sandler stuff, because some of the stuff just doesn't work no more for the audience that you're on. But you got an Avatar or Fast and the Furious that got billions and billions of dollars of a specific way to write. Why not write like that? I don't have to worry about writing Malik on the corner with the pistol waiting to get the drop.
Yeah, we know those stories. We lived those stories.
I don't want to tell that no more. But, you know, and I'm not knocking to say it's not wrong, because it's a different vantage point on how you spin it. Because every story is told. Like, every story is the same over and over and over again. Like, I wrote Chasing Cash. Chasing Cash is the same format as Last Dragon. You know what I mean? Guy meets girl. Girl is higher standing. Guy doesn't make nothing. You know what I mean? Evil guy comes in, which is showing up or something like that. And my sake, this was Cash. You know what I'm saying? But the stories is all to tell. If I want to write, like, literally, I can teach you. If I want to write a horror movie, right? I need a monster and I need a house. That's it. If we talking about Jaws, Jaws is the monster. The house was the water. You know what I'm saying? Like, any of those things.
Yeah, certain things about creationism are, when it comes to content, are just tried and true.
Uh-huh.
And then we're just all doing our individual interpretation of some standard that's like already been set to a certain degree.
Yep, and that's all it is. Like, you're not reinventing the wheel with this. Like, I'm not reinventing the wheel with this. Tyler did the same exact thing. I didn't resonate with putting a black man in a dress, and I'm not knocking at whatever creative process that he had.
Got him to a billion.
Yeah, got him to. I ain't knocking it. You know what I mean? And that was his way to say, yo, I can resonate with my audience that way. And I took the same way. I was like, dang, what could I do? And that's when I created Bernard and Tony, which is Jermaine and Skeet's character, and it's like, I can literally take this. I can already got network offers to pitch that, to take this whole idea, to take it, but it's like, what do I do with it? You know what I mean? And I have time.
Yeah, how do you develop the cinematic universe around it to make it where it's like syndication worthy? Because I think like something that Tyler Perry has told us, when he does interviews, the limited media that he does do, he drops so many gems and gives us so much information that where it's like, if you're in that same creative space as him, it automatically takes your brain to a different place where it's like, I need to be coming through the door with guaranteed syndication because that's the forever money. How do we create generational wealth? We take our stories and we negotiate for guaranteed syndication the gate.
That's it. Like, if I get guaranteed syndication, then all the hard work that I've done up this far made it all worth it, right?
Yeah.
No matter what this is, I got this. My kids can benefit off this. My kids' kids can benefit off this, because the industry right now is in a strike right now. I'm independent right now. You know, I'm not SAG. I'm independent, so, which I could be SAG if I wanted to. I just didn't really want to depress to get to that level yet, because I still wanted to be my independent route right now, to kind of figure that out first. Because if I build my audience how I'm building it right now, there's going to be a space for this, where that bag is a lot bigger than what I'm expecting to get right now. And I'll take that. I'm not in nobody's rush in any way. Like, what I do is, it's plenty for me, because I'm not in it for the money right now. I'm in it because I enjoy telling stories. I enjoy writing. If I can do this for free, and I can do this, and I could actually pull everybody for free if I had the resources, I would dump everybody in here for free or a reasonable price. Not to say my ticket price is not reasonable. I would make it like so that people can come and show it, because it's bigger than that for me.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I can be patient with certain things in the industry, because they get tricky and you end up getting swindled or talked into a deal or a situation that really not beneficial for you or your craft that you're doing it for. You know what I'm saying? We see it all the time with artists doing that type of thing. You know, you get stuck in a deal where now I'm stuck in this, and now how do I get out of it? You know what I mean? And I don't never want to go that route.
And to your point about being independent, that kind of gives, you know, when there is a situation where there's a SAG strike, SAG after strike, and then the writer's strike, and then the actor's strike, now it creates more of a premium for independent creators that aren't a part of that ecosystem, because we're still working while they're on strike.
And they're thriving. Now we only at the pool of what they have right now, and they're stuck, because pretty soon
they're going to run out of content.
They're going to run out of content. You know what I mean? For me, I can keep putting up content, and just produce certain things I like, where I'm not hamstrung, where I can't use the industry things that I could use to do it. But in the meantime, while they're on, and this is my adage of it, while they're on strike right now, they sitting back and they can actually watch me. You know what I mean? And
be exactly.
Like, who is this? Like, you know what I mean? Now I have a place where right now it's the perfect storm, where people kind of know me in the industry of my name, and my name supersedes myself of how good I am in the industry with my pen and writing, and like how I know how to do all this. Where it's like, now I can have certain people in the industry now that is still, they can sit back and just watch me. And now it's like, oh, we got some talent over here that we is unscathed. Let me pull him over. And that's how some of my big network development stuff end up coming about, where I end up in some of these rooms, and it's multiple networks that are, you know what I mean, that you gotta pay apps for, you know what I mean, to get on those things. So now it's like the perfect time for me to strike now. And you know, I get offered in, and now it's like, now I got content after content written, and it's like, now I'm ready now. I took that whole pandemic to say, okay, I can't do this. So how, I can't do a live show right now. So how do I pivot from here? And I just start stockpiling on ideas. And then I turn those ideas into scripts. And then I just sat right there and I just curated every last one of them. And I was like, put that in bold. Put that right there. And I just got so many things from different series to movies. So, but the stages is where I'm at. Like, I can't wait. I remember walking into recently, I walked into Jakarius Johnson's, Set It Off. Shout out to Jakarius Johnson, one of my like people that I admire in this play game that is black. He's from Houston, and I watch him do it. But he did Set It Off, and I walked in there at the Met, and I was like, "Yeah, this is for me. This is for me." And I'm just watching him do Set It Off, put the truck on there, hopping up and down. I'm like, "Yeah." And at that moment, I was like, "Yeah, I'm on the right path. This is where I'm at, and this is where I'm building." And now I can see the momentum from it now with you know, everybody around, and everybody just like, just latching on to it now. Like, now I have so many people that just unlimited resources now. I can get pretty much, you know, get done, because people just like, damn, I like what this man, this black man. And I got a positive, like, I'm a positive guy. Like, anybody you meet me, I'm infectious. Like, I'll do anything that you want me to do. You know what I mean? I'm that guy, you know what I mean? So I'm helping out. So you see my relationships go full circle when it comes to this stuff.
Absolutely. Kind of starting to wrap up a little bit. We talk a lot on TRP about being mission driven. And that was like a concept that was introduced to us by a good friend of ours, Kevin Harden Jr., who's official lawyer of TRP, number one attorney in Philadelphia. And he just talks about, you know, the fact of like when you have a mission and you're mission driven, you don't compromise the goal of the business because you do everything with that mission in mind. So you don't take opportunities that don't fit your ethics of what you're trying to do. With that being said, what is the mission of Brad Baker Productions?
If the dream's not bigger than you, it's not big enough. And that's just my mantra. You really have to dream big. Like, think outside of the box. Like, Brad Baker Productions is built on a dream and an idea that I didn't think that was possible, right? I didn't know anything about stage plays. I had no clue about the industry, but it just was a seed that was planted in me. And my biggest thing that I do, even with my actors and everybody around me, I always say it, they hear it all the time. I say, raise the motherfucking stakes. Raise the stakes.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm at with it as far as everything, production, producing-wise, even putting on a show, marketing, raise the stakes. And as long as I have that mentality of people around me that want to raise the stakes, sky's the limit of where this is going to go, because there's no ceiling for it. Because once we hit it, oh, we hit here. Now we're not plateauing. How can we get from here to here? And that's pretty much where I falter in. And Brad Baker Productions is in that nice little pocket where I have the audience, and now it's starting to build the attention that it's supposed to with the audiences and people around me. So. Yeah, man, I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm so excited, like, of all the stuff to come, man, because it's just, I just know, like I told you before, like we talked before, I just wholeheartedly just believe, you know what I mean? I just know it.
Well, we appreciate your time today, Brad, man. Thank you for, you know, for using us to profile
man,
you.
I'm humble, man. I appreciate this, man.
Using us to profile you, talk about everything that you got going on, remind the people when the play is going on, where they can find the tickets, and what they can expect when Till Death Do Us Part takes place here in Philadelphia.
Till Death Do Us Part, the stage play. I can't speak volumes on how you got to get your tickets and come see the show, just how fire the production. This will be, if you've never been to Broadway, this will be your first experience of, you heard of Broadway shows, this will be your first experience of an actual Broadway-ready production. And I have a phenomenal, talented cast starring Jermaine Dolly, Skeet Carter, Dawn Adams, Jerome Scott, Dion, Vitamin D. I have Milan in it. I have Saud. I got Leon in it. My man Carlo's in it, directed by Walter DeShields. I'm trying to figure out if I missed anybody. I got my two couples. Jordan is phenomenal. She's an amazing actress. I don't even know why she's not on TV. Jordan, I have a phenomenal crew that has been working so hard around the clock to make this work. Go get your tickets to see Till Death Do Us Part. It's September 14th through the 17th. You are going to be over-delivered on what you get. And I always do that. The experience that you're going to get is going to be a breath of fresh air for the city. And you're going to be looking for more content and more things like this to go around. So I'm super excited for y'all. I'm even more excited for y'all to see Saud on stage in Milan. Milan is smoking it when it comes to acting. I can't wait, because I hope that she transitions from clothing to try to get into the acting and get in front of the camera a little more. She works so hard and she her schedule up. But you guys are in for a treat. I cannot stress it so much more. Get your tickets. If you can't support me, go out. Just like, comment, share it. Anything helps, man, just to drive this engine in a positive way. You know what I mean? Just get your tickets. Go to bradbakerproductions.net. You will not regret it. It's going to feel like you're on a virtual trip to Jamaica. From the time you walk in this building, Chad sees the building. We're in the theater now. Yeah. Chad sees
building is amazing.
The building
it's crazy.
Is crazy.
So it's a real hidden gem here in Philly, man. Right on the Avenue of the Arts.
Man, but I thank you, man. TRP, you guys. Shout out to Matt. Matt couldn't be here, man. I really appreciate it. I know Matt wanted to be here. I know Matt always working and stuff like that, man. I appreciate y'all, man, from the bottom of my heart. You guys do a lot of pulling strings, and I know you from the back end, bro. You've done so much for me, bro, throughout my career, and not only that, from our friendship to my business and where I'm transitioning to actually be one of the people that believe just as much as I believe in me. And I can't thank you more for letting me have.
Hey, man, I'm humble, bro. Thank you.
So thank you for this, man.
Well, C. Diddy, Brad Baker, Big Dan behind the cam. Get y'all tickets September 14th to the 17th, bradbakerproductions.net. Till Death Do Us Part, the stage play, starring all of these phenomenal people. You do not want to miss it, man. This is going to be a crown jewel for the city of Philadelphia going forward, man. Broadway level play taking place right here at the Suzanne Roberts Theater. Get y'all tickets today.
Get them today. Let's go.